All right, so good day, everybody. Happy Friday. Hope you've all had an awesome week. Certainly did. And welcome to the Microsoft Networking Academy. As you guys know, if you've been attending this show webinar before, you probably know that it's a call for everybody. So there's partners, there's customers, and we have a few Microsoft employees on the call as well. So because of that, there is no actual NDA information that is to be discussed. Feel free to ask questions in the IM as we go, because that's what it's for. And if you do need to talk more deeply into certain things and think that these might be NDA things, feel free to reach offline if you're a Microsoft employee, of course. And if you are a customer or partner, just reach out to your account team or to myself or anyone in our team for that matter. As always, sessions are recorded and will be posted. You can find the link aka.ms/mna as in Microsoft Networking Academy. And the video session will be posted likely sometime this weekend or early next week. So for those of you who've been with us again for some time, you will know that there's two kinds of sessions: introductory sessions, more around the 200 level kind of things. And today is one of these sessions. So quickly do brief 0 to 60 on Azure networking, and we'll then welcome our partner Spotlight. And we are always finishing with a Q&A. And the other kinds of sessions, which is what the last one was and what the next one will be, is typically 300 to 400 level and has a different kind of agenda. If you guys want to receive the latest updates and detailed schedule, please email us at gbb-anf@microsoft.com, and our sessions will be available on Channel 9 as well. So that's the agenda for today. As I said, a little quick introduction, and then today we're super happy to have with us Palo Alto and Patrick Glynn, who's going to be presenting from Palo Alto a little bit later, and there's the Q&A at the end. But as in each of these sessions, feel free to ask questions as we go. That's for you guys, getting educated on our offering, Microsoft's offering, the networking platform as well, and the session as Palo Alto's platform and how they both integrate together. So I'll get started real quick by talking to what's the big picture when it comes to networking in Azure. Those of you who might have heard this a couple times, apologies for that, but those of you who are new, Azure, the networking platform of Azure is really pretty big and has lots of capabilities. And when you create virtual networks, which are really the foundation of a lot of things that people build in Azure, you bring your own network, bring your own IP addresses. You choose how you want to allow or disallow traffic based on network security groups and in other cases with virtual appliances, which is what our partner will be talking about later. And you can control the traffic flows with user-defined routing. You can always expose this through the internet, right? And there's a bunch of services you can access over the internet in your virtual network, but you can also have back-end connectivity using express routes, which we talked extensively in other sessions about, and VPNs as well. And all these things, they all integrate with your virtual appliances. If you do have virtual appliances, if you don't, well, they integrate very well into your virtual network as well. So for those of you who want or are thinking, considering using ExpressRoute, really ExpressRoute is a meeting location, right, where your network actually meets with the Microsoft network. So we have a global network, as you guys can imagine, that has edges in multiple locations around the world. So there's all these places where your network can meet with ours. And if you're rather using government, a US Gov cloud, or a German cloud, or a China cloud, then there are specific locations for these clouds because these clouds are just independent, right? So the commercial cloud is these locations, and the national clouds, as we call them, are these other locations. And you would normally get to these locations with one of your connectivity partner, typically one of these guys. And even if the partner that you're working with is not in that list, by no means does it say that you can't connect to ExpressRoute. Not at all. You can use any IP transport and get to some of these peering locations. Feel free to reach out to your account team if you want to know more. I'd be happy to engage, and your account team will reach out to me or some of my team and my teammates. Apologies. So, real quick, when we get into the data center in Azure, what do we allow you to do, guys? Well, one of the things is we certainly allow you and we want you to build your virtual data center in Azure. So real quick, you know, back then, it seems weird to say back then when we're talking about the cloud, but things move fast. People were doing a single deployment and then ending up with firewalls just like in every single of of these deployments. So what I see, what I show on the screen right now is you guys would have, you know, a common infrastructure in each of these deployments. So you have like four deployments on the screen right now where you would, you know, deploy a set of firewalls and a set of maybe domain controllers and all kinds of things. And then there's a guy who doesn't listen to IT and just does, you know, as he or she sees fit and does not include these things, which poses a problem to the network security. And we came up with that thing. We've talked about that a couple times, which is VNet peering. And this integrates very well with virtual appliances that you can share in the hub when you have a hub and spoke topology like the one that's depicted on the screen. So I'm not going to talk any deeper about that because I want to, you know, have our partner and Patrick talk about that in not necessarily the hub and spoke topology, but talk about their virtual appliance and their offerings in Azure. We have a bunch of virtual appliance partners we've had on the show a few of these guys, and you know, encourage you to look at the marketplace and to reach out to your account team. So without further ado, I will be introducing you right away to Patrick Glynn, who's kindly accepted to be with us this morning. So welcome, Patrick.
Thank you, sir. Thanks everybody for your time today. Let me grab presentation real quick. So I think we're ready to go. First off, again, thanks everybody for your time today. Appreciate that everybody is busy. My name is Patrick Glynn. I am a consulting systems engineer with Palo Alto Networks. I work on a team of about a dozen people that are focused on assisting customers who are looking to move workloads into the cloud. We help them ensure that they do so as securely as possible. Palo Alto Networks is a network security company that has been around for about 12 years now. We were founded in 2005, first product shipped in 2007. Our focus is securely enabling applications and preventing cyber threats. Our mission is to protect our digital way of life by preventing cyber threats, and prevention is one of the things that we are primarily focused on. We figure it is as important to prevent the threats as we possibly can. And we do so by continuing our innovation, releasing new products, new features, new functionality, as well as creating various feedback loops for data to get back into the products to increase the prevention posture. Just a quick overview of where we are as a company. Here are Q2 fiscal highlights, continuing our growth strategy, increasing our customer base, things of that nature. So one of the things that we need to take a look at sort of as background is the evolution of attacker, right? So over the past couple of years, we've seen a bit of a change in the way attackers behave. Right? So by a number of accounts, the cybercrime industry is about a $1 trillion industry worldwide. And so obviously people go where the money is. And part of the prevention strategy includes making it extremely difficult for them to leverage their attacks, thereby making them essentially go somewhere else, right? If we take away their ability to get the return on the investment, they go somewhere else. Similarly, on the cyber warfare side, there are about 100 or so nations that have active cyber capabilities within their militaries. And even though their goals may be slightly different or vastly different from cybercrime, the end result is, for us, is the same. It's trying to make it so difficult for them that they move on. Another thing that has changed is not only the attacker, but also the attack. Right? So historically, when the internet was a kinder and gentler location, when the attacks came out, they were just sort of basic script kiddies type stuff where people were throwing stuff out there addressed to whom it may concern. And as things have evolved, we've gone from that known threat approach to something that is quite a bit more evasive. Also, polymorphic malware was introduced, people leveraging zero-day vulnerabilities all the way up to threats against your mobile workforce, right? Pretty much everybody has an iPhone, iPad, some sort of tablet or mobile device, and that presents a yet another vector, fairly large one, if you will, for attacks into the network. And historically, what people have done is they've gone through and put in various security devices in an attempt to get all of that stuff under control to provide that level of protection. Right? They've installed a UTM that's got multiple blades in it. They've installed anti-APT, DNS protection, things of that nature. And there's some challenges with that particular approach, including limited visibility, right? Not every one device sees everything. So you have to go in, you have to install a SIM, start correlating things there. Also, when these attacks occur, oftentimes you have to, because of the disparate nature of the devices, you get into a situation where you have to do manual responses. And so that reduces the time to protection and defense for your security organization. What's needed is the ability to protect everywhere. So historically, we've had the internet edge, then we moved into the data center edge, perhaps VLAN to VLAN control, but now with the mobile devices and the cloud, we need to expand that to include all of that. And it's the cloud that we're focused on today. Palo Alto Networks does this through essentially a triangle, if you will, of our platform approach to security. It starts at the bottom left corner with the next generation firewall. So we do application identification. So we have signatures for a number of applications, and they're true layer 7 signatures, not just URLs or what have you. And we also have URL filtering and threat prevention, IPS, IDS, that goes along with it. Because we understand the application, we can better apply threat prevention. Up at the top is our WildFire cloud. And what it does is it is the zero-day malware detection. Once a piece of malware or a file or an unknown file of some sort passes through into the firewall or attempts to pass through the firewall, we can send it up to the cloud and do the analysis on it and get signatures back to the firewall for prevention within about 5 minutes. Aperture is our SaaS security solution, and it goes through and it can look at things such as Dropbox and Box.com looking for malware, oversharing, things of that nature. So one of the things that's becoming increasingly popular is for bad actors to go through and mine GitHub for credentials associated with people's templates and then turn around and use those to bootstrap themselves into the infrastructure. And so Aperture can be used to help get that under control and prevent that from happening. In the bottom left, bottom right corner, we have our endpoint protection, which is Traps and Global Protect. So the Global Protect allows you to apply the controls and the filtering for the individual hosts, irrespective of where they're at. So, for example, if you've got a mobile workforce, they may be on the network 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. But afterwards, when they go home or leave for the weekend or go someplace, they're not protected. Global Protect can help customers get that under control and protect that. And then also Traps. So Traps is the endpoint solution that is focused on preventing behavior associated with malware rather than a traditional AV solution which scans for signatures associated with it. All of those feed into WildFire, and AutoFocus is our product that provides customers with visibility into that big data. So we've got all of these customers that are feeding information into WildFire, and AutoFocus allows them to go through and start figuring out pretty quickly whether or not a particular piece of malware is just some generic piece of junk or somebody is specifically targeting them or their industry vertical. One of the things about wildfire and autofocus is you can use that as a feedback loop back into the firewall to get increased prevention in the terms of URL filtering and threat prevention updates. So as a consequence, if we take a look at more of a holistic picture, now what we can do is we can extend that same level of protection irrespective of where the user at or where the data resides. But for those of you who are fairly familiar with the cloud, you've probably seen this before, but I think it bears repeating, the shared responsibility model. It essentially establishes the DMARC in terms of responsibility for security. So guys at Microsoft are responsible for the security of the Azure cloud, the underlying hypervisor, network hardware, so on and so forth. It is the customer that is responsible for the security of their data in the cloud. So anything you put up there, the systems, operating systems, database, the information, all that other nifty stuff. And this is where we help people secure and get better visibility into their information. So we do this through our VM series for Microsoft Azure, and all of the same functionality that our next generation hardware firewalls provide, we can give you that same level of visibility and control and prevention in the cloud environments. So if we take a quick look, here are a handful of deployment use cases at a very, very high level. Coming from an infrastructure-centric approach, the segmentation and the internet gateway are ones that are probably familiar to everybody already. One of the nice things about the cloud is it brings us quite a bit of additional flexibility in terms of deployment scenarios. One of them is that hybrid approach. So when you're moving applications, you can take the decision to move an application slowly over time if you're doing a lift and shift, or if you're designing the application from the ground up and you have data location restrictions, you can go through and you can maintain the database back in your on-prem solution and then come across a site-to-site VPN, access that database from your web application. Again, you can use express routes, you can use the site-to-site VPN, what have you. And then one of the other ones that we're seeing people take a look at is the remote access case, right? Because Azure has access points essentially spread throughout the world, where you have a mobile workforce, what you can do is you can stand up VPN firewalls in those regions where your employees are, and then they can connect to their closest VPN server to get the necessary filtering and then access resources back on your on-prem location. Just a quick side note, in terms of licensing models, we have a handful of them. You can bring your own license, so you can purchase licenses from your reseller and you can apply those in the cloud. You can also deactivate and reactivate so you can move the licenses around as necessary. Also, there are a couple of bundles available in the Azure Marketplace that provide varying levels of features. There's a couple of them out there. One of them is just threat prevention and the firewall. The other one has all features and subscriptions available to you. And then for larger customers, we have a VM series ELA, which is essentially a way for customers to, who do not know ahead of time what their consumption needs are going to be, to sort of estimate what it is going to be up front and then spend a year or so getting that figured out. We don't have a true up at the end of the year, so if you consume more than you anticipated during that year, we don't go back looking for revenue. And what we do is we reevaluate on a yearly basis what your usage is, figure out what your actual needs are for the upcoming year, and then just reset the clock, so to speak. If you have any need for any more details, please don't hesitate to reach out to your local account team. They can help you with that. There are some benefits to the VM series ELA. As I mentioned before, you essentially can go through and figure out what you need without having to over or underestimate. And you also get a little more predictability in terms of your cost structure. Okay, so that's it for the kind of boring stuff. Let's get into some of the more interesting stuff. You've worked with Azure, you're probably fairly familiar with user-defined routes, and user-defined routes are critical to insertion of Palo Alto networks into the infrastructure. They make it really easy to essentially frictionlessly insert a control point in. And that is important for a number of reasons. Just as a quick aside, one of the big ones is zero trust. So about 4 years ago, John Kindervag over at Forrester Research proposed the zero trust model for network. And in it, they said that you assume that no user, account, device, whatever is ever trusted. You force everything to go through a control point, which gives you a lot more visibility and control. And this is true irrespective of whether or not this workload is an internal-only workload, web-facing workload, regardless, you inspect it all. Microsoft via Azure makes it really, really easy to do this with user-defined routes, right? So if you remember back to our zero trust model, the Azure guys are responsible for security of the cloud. You're responsible for security in the cloud. And you know, one of the nice things about Zero Trust is that it also gives us a lot more visibility into how the application works. If we're taking an application and we're lifting and shifting it in the cloud, oftentimes the app developers don't even know how it works. And so by implementing the Zero Trust approach, you can go through and you can get a pretty good feel for how that application actually works, right? Because everything goes through the firewall, you can go through and you can see exactly what applications are talking to which hosts. One of the really neat side effects of that from a security standpoint is that then you can start focusing on the bad stuff, right? One of the questions you can ask yourself is, you know, why do we see a normal traffic and URL log, but we see an HTTP response code of 500 coming back from the web server? Right, that should set off alarm bells right there because there's something going wrong with the application. Either the user's made a request that is inappropriate or there's something broken on the application side. From a security standpoint, that's really useful information and allows you to quickly focus on the stuff you need to. Plus, what you can do is you can also go through and lob that information over to the app team and let them know that there is something broken with their application oftentimes before they even know it. So there's a question about high availability. We will get to that here in just a little bit. All right, so if we assume for the nonce that we have a VNet setup configured such as this, right, which is not atypical for a multi-tier application, the VNets would look something similar to this. Based upon this, if we take and put an infrastructure-centric view of the world layered on top of it, you might assume it looks something similar to this, right? Each subnet is separated by some sort of central system router. If you were to look at the routing table on an individual host, that would seem to support that particular view, right? Everything appears to have to go through that central router to get to wherever it needs to go from there. And hop to the next slide here. From that, you might conclude that packet flow occurs thusly, right? If you're trying to get from the web subnet to the NAT subnet, you go through the central router down to the NAT subnet, and to get back, you go back through. In fact, that is not the case. As it turns out, what happens is that the underlying network fabric grabs that packet. We do layer two, or it does layer two hijacking, and grabs that packet as soon as it hits the wire. So if you were to take a look at the ARP table on the web or the NAT, you would only see one MAC address, and that's the fabric MAC address. So to get around that, and to make the packets flow the way we want to, we use user-defined routes to make that happen. Right, we can go in and we can define user-defined routes to essentially take that packet and make it go wherever we want to. One of the places that we can make that packet go is to a Palo Alto Networks firewall or some other control point. So the nice thing about that then is we get that visibility and we use those same UDRs to ensure that the packet flow on the reverse side is the same. If we take a quick look at a basic three-tier application that might look something like this, where you've got a web, an app, and a database, plus you've got an express route gateway going back to your on-prem solution. Got a firewall with a couple of interfaces on the trust as well as the untrust side. One of the things that I might point out right now is that as of the February-March timeframe, it is possible to assign multiple public IP addresses to a VM in Azure. And that's made it really convenient for us because now we can have multiple public IP addresses on the firewall. So you can host those directly on it for the purposes of test dev, what have you. If we were to look at the UDRs, what we would see is essentially we're setting everything up so that irrespective of where those backend subnets need to go, they have to go through the firewall. And then we turn around and we let the firewall handle all of that. There's a question that came up, is the VM series the WAF only? No, it is not. So the VM series firewall will do application identification, and it's not just web application either. So it will identify about 2,600 some odd distinct applications, not only web, but also things such as RDP, file transfer, Netflix. You know, a lot of the applications that you see in a typical enterprise, it will identify based upon layer 7 signatures. It can also go through and implement IDS IPS functionality. It will go through and implement anti-spyware functionality, getting all of command and control stuff. It will do network antivirus, or it can do network antivirus. It can also do URL filtering as well as VPN termination. Along those lines, the threat prevention features are particularly interesting when it comes to web-based applications, because what we can do with that is we can enable URL filtering on the VM series firewall so that we log all inbound requests coming in from the internet. We can go through and we can create custom threat signatures looking for HTTP response codes of 500, 403, what have you, even 200. And then when the web traffic starts flowing through the box, we can go through and start correlating that. So we have a traffic log that's got source destination time. We've got a correlated URL log with the exact request that came through. And then we've got an HTTP response code in the threat log. All three of those in one location that you can take a look at. So now you can go through, as I mentioned a bit earlier, you can start figuring out when things are going wrong, perhaps when you're under attack or when the application itself is broken, by looking at those correlated logs. All right, so here we go. When we want to get back to the on-prem stuff via the express route, we just go through a separate routing table, take it off of the firewall, and send it back through the express route connection, either via another firewall or via the existing one, right? So one of the nice things about UDRs is since we can send packets wherever we want to, we can minimize the number of devices that we have as necessary. The preceding, right, this stuff is fine oftentimes for test dev where you've just got the one firewall. In a production deployment, you may want to go through and set up something that includes a bit more availability for the application. So if we take a look here, what we have is a couple of Azure load balancers that are sandwiching a pair of Palo Alto Networks firewalls for both inbound as well as outbound access to the internet. Now, for these purposes, I'm using one single pair of firewalls. However, what you could conceivably do is you could set up multiple pairs of firewalls, one for inbound, one for outbound, and then a third pair if you wanted to for either bound in between. Right? So some compliance requirements specify that you have multiple firewalls. It makes policy management a little bit easier, but it's not absolutely necessary. If we take a look at the data flow on the inbound side, so we have a connection request coming in from the internet, and I apologize, my colleague that created this, he put the internet on the left side instead of where it's traditionally on the right side. But in any event, what we do is we request comes in, it hits the public load balancer, it gets load balanced across one of the two of the firewalls. The firewall that receives the packet does a source net on the outbound side headed towards the load balancer for the web tier. That way we ensure symmetric packet flow back and forth and then hands it off to that load balancer. One of the other nice things that has just recently become available to us is the ability to use a load balancer as a destination in a user-defined route. So now we can specify the load balancer as the next hop, which makes our jobs quite a bit easier. The reverse flow essentially proceeds pretty much as you would expect. The response packet hits the UDR, which says to send it to the firewall, and then off you go. There's a question came in whether or not this is available in GA today. This is available GA today. So as of, I think it was the March-April timeframe, this is available today, and Palo Alto Networks has a GitHub repository where this template is available if you wish to deploy it. So if you want to tinker with it, it is out there. But yes, it is available today, not in preview. I will get that link. Sorry, somebody asked for the link, and I will get that link sent out shortly. So if we look at the outbound connectivity, things flow a little bit different, right? So from the web tier, if it's going out to the internet, initiating connection, say for updates or something similar to that, or if you've got a deployment where you're essentially deploying your application in completely different regions, if you will, for say high availability or different clouds, what have you, you can use the internet as a transport backbone, in which case it would need to go out to the internet from wherever its subnet is. We hit the UDR and the UDR sends it to the egress load balancer, which load balances it across the two firewalls and then out to the internet. We do source net on the outbound side so that the traffic comes back and we have symmetric traffic. One of the interesting things here is that we enable floating IP on this egress load balancer. And what that does for us is that disables network address translation, destination NAT on the load balancer. So the firewall sees the actual source and the actual destination, right? And for outbound requests, that's critical because otherwise we're having to write all sorts of NAT rules. As it stands, we can now see the original source and just let routing handle it pretty much as expected. One of the other things that the load balancers do for us is they also do direct server return so that when the response comes back to the firewall, rather than go back through the load balancer, what it will do is it will bypass the load balancer and go directly back to the originating requester. So it's really a rather slick load balancer in terms of the functionality. So if we look at the response, again, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, it comes directly back and bypasses the load balancer, goes directly back to the requesting server. So there's a couple of things to note when we talk about the Azure load balancer. One of them is that, as with any load balancer, it will do health checks to ensure that the infrastructure that it's load balancing to is available. And with the Azure load balancer, it uses a single IP address, 168.63.129.16. Microsoft has documentation on this, and this IP address is used regardless of where you deploy this load balancer. And so if you are using a firewall, you need to take that into account in the firewall policy and routing. Or if you're looking at your logs and you see this strange IP address that just seemed to drop out of the sky from Hong Kong, you know that it is the IP address that the load balancer is doing its health checks on. Now, one other thing when it comes to this particular deployment here, not necessarily if you're using a multi-firewall deployment for inbound, outbound, and either bound, But if you're using the same pair of firewalls for inbound and outbound access simultaneously, we have a bit of a problem with this IP address because we've got an IP address with a source that is coming into both sides of the firewall. The firewall will do a routing lookup and decide that one or the other side, depending upon how your routing is set up, is essentially spoofing the traffic. So the way we get around that is we just use multiple virtual routers on the firewall and everything flows pretty much as expected. So next we'll turn our attention to high availability. There are a couple of notes regarding high availability. And one of the things that I try and point out when we have that discussion with customers is that when it comes to high availability, one of the things that we need to do is we need to distinguish between stateful failover and availability. Right? One of the nice things about the cloud is the ability to provide availability for your application. And that's really what a lot of people are trying to do is, let's figure out what is important for the business, what makes the business money, and let's make that available. When we talk about high availability in the cloud, there are a couple of challenges as a consequence, right? So, with an on-prem solution, you have a dedicated high-speed link, usually between the two firewalls to provide state synchronization. And we don't have that in the cloud at the moment. Also, there's really no concept of IP sharing, such as you might have with HSRP or VRRP. And so to move that traffic, we have to do typically one of two things, right? We have to change the UDR to point to another box, or we have to move the IP address associated with the UDR destination to another device. Either way, we have to make a handful of API calls for that. And API calls are fairly expensive in terms of time because it has to detach the interface, move it, reattach it, or it has to move the UDR, what have you. And so as a consequence, what we're seeing is, sometimes 30 to 60 seconds to move that IP address to accommodate that. And at that point, a lot of the benefits of state synchronization are lost. So as a consequence, what I recommend is I recommend that my customers go back and take a look and think cloudy when it comes to availability. Try and figure out what is important to the application, right? Most of the time they're looking to be able to get application availability. So then once they figure that out, then they can start looking at what is necessary to deliver that application in a highly available manner. So oftentimes the application, when you're moving it, you can take advantage of a lot of that high availability that Azure provides for you, right? So for example, if you use an Azure load balancer in front of a pair of firewalls that's load balancing to your backend application servers, then you can suffer the failure of any one piece of component. Plus, the Azure load balancers themselves are highly available. And if you use some sort of backend database service that's highly reliable, then what you can do is you can store your session information in that database. So at that point, if you lose anything, you're still in business as far as the application is concerned, right? What you could also do and what we also recommend is that you take a look at it from the standpoint of regions as well. So you've got an application that you stood up in one particular region. It's pretty easy to go ahead and use templates and scripting, which we'll talk about templates in a moment, to deploy that application, that complete infrastructure, into another region and then use Azure Traffic Manager to load balance and account for failover. So by spreading that application over multiple regions, either within the United States or the world or whatever country you happen to be in, then you can go through and you can start getting high availability at the application level. And it doesn't really matter if anything goes down. Obviously, you want to know about it, but the application itself continues running pretty much as expected. I just wanted to mention templates for just a moment. So, as with everything else, one of the nice things about the cloud is the ability to use templates to deploy your applications, right? And it's not just, sorry, not applications, but infrastructure. So you can go through and you can deploy entire infrastructures using templates. Templates are a couple of JSON files. One of them has parameters and the other one has the main resources in it. Microsoft has a fair bit of documentation regarding that. And Palo Alto Networks firewalls can be deployed using templates as well as, you know, scripting or, you know, whatever you happen to use. Typical ARM template, you can go through and you can deploy that from the command line, or you can go through and you can deploy that from GitHub directly once you're logged in. There's a couple of things, right? A couple of miscellaneous things. We're working on VM monitoring. So in other environments, we have the ability to monitor the resource group so that we can use security tagging to control policy and traffic flow. At the moment, we can't do that in Azure. However, we are working on getting that. So I think that's pretty much the extent of it for me. If anybody has any questions, please let me know. I think I've addressed almost all of the ones in the chat.
Yeah, so far you did. Now there's a new one that just came. Can you talk about integration with OMS and log analytics? Can multiple devices feed their log into OMS for the purpose of alerting and detecting patterns across multiple devices? Azure does this. I mean, you can certainly feed the logs of your virtual machines. I don't know if Palo Alto, do you guys have a capability to feed logs into log analytics?
I would have to check.
The syslogs, sorry, can be sent there.
Right. I know the syslogs can be sent there. So if anything that can accept syslogs, we can send syslog to it, as well as SNMP traps, emails, things of that nature. I have not looked specifically at the log analytics at the moment, so I am not certain.
Okay, but log analytics is able to pull data from sources of the nature of syslogs. And if it were Windows machines, it can look at the event logs and these kinds of things. If it's Linux machines, it can pull them through an agent. And I'll keep a 1% there in case I'm wrong, but I think it can also pretty confidently can also receive syslog events, yep, which could correlate with other things.
So I have put the link to our GitHub repository into the chat window.
Excellent. That'll be useful for some of our customers. Might be useful more if you guys want to deploy like highly available things. If you look at the market or solutions, if you take the appliances in the marketplace, it's not going to pre-configure. It's all the nice things that Patrick had showed before where you have those multiple load balancers and, well, multiple, there's two load balancers and two firewalls. It's not going to do that all for you from the marketplace, but I guess that's the goal of your templates, right?
Yes. So what the templates in GitHub will do is they will essentially deploy that infrastructure that we showed a few moments ago. Mm-hmm. It will create the availability set. It will go through and let me get back to it right here. So it will essentially deploy this infrastructure right here. It will go ahead and deploy the firewalls, create the availability set. The firewalls that it deploys out of the marketplace are firewalls that are bring your own license, because we have bundle one and bundle two pre-licensed firewalls that you pay per hour for. You could go in and modify the template to deploy that if you were so inclined. If what you could also do is go through and work with your Palo Alto Networks account team and they can get you demo licenses to allow you to go through and deploy this as well. We are working on documentation for this. At the moment, one of my colleagues is working on getting this written so that customers can take this and better understand how all of the pieces work, right? So, you know, knowing and needing to understand availability sets and how they work and what their requirements are in Azure is being documented.
Great stuff. I just by the way, I've unmuted the audience, so if anyone wants to get off mute and ask question, that would be a good time. But in the meantime, there's another question you might be able to answer.
So okay, so as far as that is concerned, yeah, unfortunately, let me grab that one. So if you search for multi-IP, that is the one that we're looking for. Let me see if I can find that. There we go. So that one right there that I just pasted into the chat window is the link to this, the template for this right here. No problem. Happy to help. So that's pretty much all I have.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Patrick. I've unmuted the audience again. If anybody wants to ask a question, just unmute yourselves or in the IM. Otherwise, we'll give each other back a few minutes off our day, and hopefully we'll all spend great weekends.
Hi, this is Jason Melchek. I have a question.
Yes, sir.
This is more of a Azure-centric type question, but I'm just curious. We use templates. We use JSON templates for deploying virtual machines. Just curious how much of this we can automate. Like, I know we can put UDRs, or I believe we can, in these JSON templates to create the VMs, but it looks like there's It looks like there's another UDR, however, we need to have on the Palo Alto side, right? Going back to route the traffic inbound. Mm-hmm. Is there any way to accomplish that through the same JSON template, or do we have to wrap this around PowerShell?
Nope. So as far as that is concerned, that template right there creates multiple UDRs and attaches them to the relevant VNets for you. So that is something that you can all do in one. Sorry, subnets, sorry. Yep. Yes. So that is something that you can do all within the same template.
You could do it using PowerShell, but you can all automate it using templates.
Right.
Every UDR included.
Let me get further into the weeds on this. I'm sorry for anyone else that needs to ask a question, but when you're creating a template through, let's say, using templates in the actual web portal, right, which is something not all of our users or scripters, or not all of our administrators are, you're probably familiar with that situation. Mm-hmm. So we try to present that one interface, that single template for everyone to use. The problem is, can we create these UDRs in a VNet, assuming the firewall belongs to a different resource group, to a different VNet, can we create these UDRs in two different resource groups?
Answer is yes. You can create UDRs in multiple resource groups in the same.
From the same template?
I'm not positive on if it's the same template or not. Apologies for that. If you can create things in multiple resource groups in the same template, I'm not positive on that. So if there's any Microsofties still on the call that know this, feel free to unmute yourselves. I cannot confirm this for a fact. But if they're in different VNets, you need to, I mean, if you want to use a UDR in VNet A to point to a device in VNet B, you need to make sure those VNets are peered. If they're not peered, it's not going to work, right?
Yeah.
So over a VPN would not work. They need to be directly peered with each other in the same region. If you do that, and that's kind of, back when, before Patrick started talking, it showed very super briefly a hub and spoke topology where you can absolutely do that. And that's actually what it's meant to be. So the UDRs would be in each of the spokes, for example, pointing to devices or Palo Alto firewalls, for example, in the hub. That would absolutely work. But normally the UDRs would be deployed as part of the, I say normally, I guess that's how I would do it. Doesn't mean that everybody needs to do it this way, nor is this the smartest way to do it. But how I would do it is I would deploy the UDRs maybe in a different template. It would be kind of my template for creating spokes.
Right. I could.
If that makes any sense.
One of the things that we recommend is that people go through and use resource groups for role-based access control. And so as a consequence, what I would recommend is you go through and, say, deploy the firewalls, the VNet, all of that infrastructure, including the UDRs, into its own resource group, and then deploy your other infrastructure, say your web servers, into a separate resource group, and then connect that to that VNet. So that buys you a couple of things. One is isolation, so you don't have to worry about the database admins stomping all over your web servers. But it also allows you to go through and implement an immutable infrastructure approach, right? Where essentially you go through and rather than patch live systems, you use golden images to spin up your web servers, your database servers, what have you. In the event that something goes wrong, something dies, you have a vulnerability that comes out, you just recreate a new resource group using your patched golden image, flip the DNS or the routing pointer. If everything works, then you just blow away or archive the old stuff. If it doesn't work, then you can just flip the routing pointer back to the original one. Does that make sense?
Yep. That's actually, we're doing something very similar to that. We're still using the image from Microsoft, but we do have separate resource groups for everything for customers, tenants, if you will, and the network, virtual network, is in its own resource group. And that's actually part of the problem is right now I can connect to a subnet that's provisioned from that resource group in that VNet,
right.
But I don't know that I can create objects, in other words, UDRs. There, or if I had the Palo Alto in a different resource group connecting to that the same way, same problem, right?
Right. So as far as that is concerned, I'm trying to think.
Every resource can be in a different resource group.
Right.
It doesn't really matter. They will all be able to talk to each other, but you need to make sure that from a from a template, I don't know if template A can deploy resources. In fact, the more I think about it, I don't think it's possible to have like five resource groups in one template. You could very well have five files and do five deployments one after the other.
Right.
In fact, I'm pretty sure now that you can't. The more I think about it, because it's a deployment of a resource group and then you have everything that's been deployed in there. But if you need a UDR and that would be in a different resource group for whatever the reason is, I would just start another deployment. And normally, you would probably want that your network and everything around the network be in maybe the same resource group. So you can apply, RBAC and say, okay, my network admin guys, just like on-prem, you don't give the keys of the database to the same guys you give the keys of networking and firewalls and, it's typically different people. So you, with RBAC, you can implement sort of the same division of tasks and labor.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very cool. Yeah, you could also, I guess a lot of people are using Chef and Puppet for that as well to configure it. So you set up a very basic deployment template for a golden image of a host and then use some sort of orchestration software on the back end to do the configuration of that host. That way, the guys that are not necessarily template hackers, if you will, all they know is they just get access to a bare system to which they can apply whatever recipes that they need to build their application.
Yeah.
I think Terraform is another one that I've heard is very popular as well.
Is there any more questions from the audience? Nick from Soft Landing is asking you, Patrick, if you share your coordinates with him.
I'll reach out to him afterwards.
Okay, cool. Anybody else? All right. Well, then, in that case, and Ken LeMay is responding here. So great. Thanks. Thanks, Ken. Thanks a lot, Patrick, for being with us. And I will wish everybody a super great weekend and be there in 2 weeks. It's going to be some deep dive, hopefully interesting topic on application gateways. So. Have yourself all great weekends. And thank you again, Patrick.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, guys.